What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast that would never invite Gianni Infantino to come and watch. Today, Alex Neil's Gale Force Revenge, Warnock's Terriers Lackbite, Shrewsbury's sensational Salop comeback, and an EFL expert joins us to talk about the teams we haven't. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. How you doing, listener? We're coming at you a little earlier than usual this week. I'll be frank, that's because I'm going on holiday on Monday. So my guests have been kind enough to reschedule their Sunday evenings to help me out. I say guests, I mean partners in crime, of course. Adrian Clark and Sam Parkin are here with me. How you doing, chaps?
Good evening.
Hello, mate. How you doing?
All right, yeah.
Is today's pod just going to be about Arsenal, or are we going to fit a bit of EFL in? What's the scoop?
Will we talk about Arsenal needing to come from two goals down against the second worst team in the Premier League? I wonder. Maybe. We'll talk about Bournemouth next season.
Probably. Yeah, you do 5 minutes on Bournemouth, can't we? Who are they going to get in next year for a preview challenge?
Come on, let me crow while I can. Come on.
Enjoy it. Enjoy it. It looks like the Premier League title's going to the Emirates, but our concern is not that. It is the Football League. And I mentioned we're sponsored by Quinbet. How about this? The guys at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It's for new customers at sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod or when we tweet it out. If you do that, we get a little kickback, so we would appreciate it. It's 18 plus, and remember, folks, always gamble responsibly. Okay, because we're recording on Sunday, nobody's been sacked yet. So in the absence of what we call news, which is basically managers what got sacked this week, we're going to have a little debate about what was the goal of the weekend. This is Sam's idea. He put forth a couple in the group chat. For me, it's Gabriel Sara, that swivel and finish for Norwich against Millwall. Ryan Hardy ran it close. Clarky, you've gone elsewhere.
I've added a fifth, by the way. Sorry. I don't know if I put it in the group. Alfie Mays joined the shortlist as well for the winning goal against Fleetwood. So sorry about that, Matt.
Okay, well, nice. We're going to talk about Alfie May later. All good goals, but Clark, it's not Alfie May and it's not Gabriel Sara for you.
I've gone for Jack Sowerby of Northampton. Context of the game, you know, they're pressing and pressing, trying to get the only goal of the game. The corner comes in, it's headed out to the edge of the box. It's coming out of the sky. And Jack Sowerby has just creamed it on the volley. Goalkeeper doesn't move. Body's flying at him as well. Two players come sprinting at him, but no, eye on the ball, lashes it top bins. I thought it was a great goal. Really did.
Sam, I also did really like that Ryan Hardy one that you flagged. It was one of those that made me go, ooh, when he closed down the man, and then when he finished it. Just like all his own work. Absolutely sensational with that like bit of grit and then bit of quality. But I'm guessing that's not the one you're going for.
Oh, I've looked at them just before we've come on, and I'm talking about execution here. The difficulty factor, and it's Alfie May, in my opinion. I love the Hardy one because he closes blocks, then the first touch is incredible, no margin for error, and then he almost lifts it on the half volley. So it's amazing. And I'm going to talk further about Gyökeres later, so I'll just tease that. That's amazing as well. The reason that I'm going to say Alfie May is better than your two, the Sara one is just instinctive. It's brilliant, but the first touch isn't perfect, so it's just instinct. I think Sowerby's is a bit of a hit and hope. He's not directing that where it goes. Alfie May can only put that strike in one place, and he has to take it early because of the defender who's closing him. So he takes it at a really awkward height, and it's almost outside of the foot or even ankle, and it's steered. It's not bulleted. It's steered right into the far stanchion, far side netting, sorry. So that's the best goal. And it was weird. When I played the five, I was not envisaging going anywhere near Alfie May, but that is the best goal for me tonight on this fine Sunday evening.
All right. Well, it's nice to know that after nearly 5 years of podcasting together, we still can't come to any consensus on pretty much anything. What was your favourite, listener? Let us know at EFL What The on Twitter is the place to get in touch. Okay, next up today, we're going to look back on some of the weekend's big results. And we have to start, I insist, at the Stadium of Light, where one suspects Alex Neil rather enjoyed his afternoon catching up with and then thrashing old friends as his current club, Stoke, mashed the Mackhams of Sunderland 5-1. I mean, I say he enjoyed it, Adrian. There was the fact that he got booed off the coach, pelted with stuff thrown from the stands and needed a security guard to get out safely. He said, "What is disappointing and frustrating is that I've been painted the villain. There are a lot of untrue things that have been said about me, but I won't cry." I mean, he's kind of rising to it a little bit, but I have some sympathy with him because because he did get them promoted. It's not like he just left them in the lurch.
He should be regarded as a Sunderland legend, really, the way that he got them out of League One, where they'd been trapped for year upon year upon year. But it's the nature of the exit, isn't it? It's the fact that he basically ditched them mid-season or early season because he had a better contract offer. Now, from his end, I understand it because he was probably looking for a bit more security, a longer deal, a decent rise. And Sunderland were very reluctant. Stoke were more than happy to weigh him in and give him that, you know, give him that confidence. So I kind of understand it, even though it was a betrayal of sorts. But then again, if I was a Sunderland fan, I'd have booed the living daylights out of him as well. No doubt about that. But no, this would be the sweetest of sweet victories for Alex Neil. And I thought it was incredibly intelligent, actually, the game plan. He knows the players inside out, and what he did, and he admitted this afterwards, was to target the two central midfielders. He said that Sunderland didn't have a real natural defensive midfielder in the side with no Corey Evans. And it was all about turning the ball over and powering down the middle of the pitch. And we saw that with Will Smallbourne. We saw that with Josh Laurent, certainly for the first goal. And throughout the game on transitions, they were dynamite, Stoke City, and they punished them big time. Look at the tackle count in this game, and it tells probably a story. Sunderland wanting to get on the ball, nice and technical, up against a strong, physically robust Stoke team. But it was Stoke, 32 tackles to Sunderland's 15, and obviously five goals to one as well. So, yeah, I mean, there's lots of things I could talk about here. Smallbone's hat-trick of assists was different gravy. Dwight Gayle getting a very rare brace these days. And
a cheeky setup as well. Enjoyed that.
Yeah, he was winding them up big time, wasn't he, with that celebration. But yeah, a great day for Stoke. But if I was a Stoke fan, would I be getting excited on the back of this? No. Until they start winning 3, 4, 5 in a row, then you can't believe in or trust in this Stoke team, can you?
No, it doesn't look like it. They're still 16th. Pretty miserable season for them. 3 defeats on the spin for Sunderland now. I wonder where that leaves their playoff hopes. Oh, Colin, you should have stayed away. The new manager bounce just not happening for Huddersfield, who wear the look of a doomed pack of terriers. They were hit for 4 at home by Coventry to leave them bottom of the table. They're 7 points from safety, back-to-back 4-0 defeats. Neil Warnock said, "I've never been in a situation as bad as this, if I'm honest." Brutal run of games coming up for them, Sam, as well. Bristol City, West Brom, Norwich, Millwall, Borough. It's going to take something absolutely miraculous, isn't it? That's what Quinbet think there. 8-1 on to go down.
Oof. Well, it is now, yeah. I mean, they've not had a clean sheet since December. They've only scored in one of the last 5, and that was that, you know, maiden victory, maiden game for Neil Warnock when they beat Birmingham. So I don't want to just pin this all on Gokarez, but I think he was a big reason for this victory when you consider that Danny Ward was the top scoring Huddersfield player on display with 3 goals. And there's such a dearth of attacking threat, I think, throughout that 11 that he could play yesterday. Gokarez was sublime. The goal is amazing. Just stinks of someone so full of confidence, something he must practice in training. I can't even articulate what it was, to be honest. Is it a scoop? Is it a stab? Is it a dink? I've got no idea. It's amazing. I loved how slow it went in the net as well. It was just formidable. But his assist was amazing as well. He took another goal wonderfully well. It was littered with individual errors for Huddersfield. Obviously, Helic for the first one, goalkeeping error for the Hamer goal. And I wanted to pinpoint that Coventry spine, really. McFadden, since he's come back in, 4 wins and 2 draws. They had 2 wins in 10 when he was missing. And I think he's such a steadying influence for them. But Hamer in midfield, goal and assist yesterday. And obviously Jokeres' numbers and his display in this game was just formidable. And this was a good time to play Coventry. They've got a dearth of midfielders at the moment, real injuries. Jamie Allen, Casey Palmer, Ben Sheaf, obviously Callum O'Hare. If they can keep the nucleus of this squad together, they've got a chance last year. And it wasn't long ago we were saying that this could be desperately tight for Coventry this year and they could potentially get relegated. So this has been an incredible turnaround. Fantastic result for Huddersfield. Yeah, it's very, very, very challenging and I don't see them escaping.
I've got a question for you, Sam. Victor Jokeres, is he good enough to be a Premier League star, because we've seen Jarrod Bowen make that jump. We've seen Ivan Toney make that jump. They're just two of several examples that we've had in recent season. Brennan Johnson is doing pretty well, you've got to say. Would he be, you know, doing the business in the top flight?
I could probably name about six teams in the Premier League where he'd get in straight away now, this minute, I think. I mean, he's better than the strikers at a lot of clubs down the bottom of the table, in the middle of the table. So yes, is my answer. I remember seeing him at Swansea probably 3 years ago now, on loan under Steve Cooper, not getting a game or coming on sparingly for a few minutes. Didn't fancy him at all on loan from Brighton. So it wasn't long ago that I think he'd had a few loans during this period. Wasn't happening for him. So his improvement has been meteoric, really. It's his strength, I think. His running power, his hold up. He's a big boy. He uses his body brilliantly, I think. And yeah, I love the awareness for the third yesterday as well, or the fourth, was it, for Tyler Walker to tap home. So yeah, he's a big difference maker at the moment. I'd be surprised if Burnley don't come back in for him in the summer, because that looked like a done deal, I think, last August. So that's the type of move I envisage him getting, yeah, certainly.
Maybe it's just my age, but I'd love to see Coventry get promoted. And also another shout out, as we do a lot on this podcast, for Mark Robbins just being a brilliant manager.
We need to get Mark Robbins on, I think.
Yeah, because we keep bigging him up every week.
Someone sent me, actually, I don't know the game because I was knackered last night, but someone sent me Mark Robbins doing a Jokeres, basically, from his own playing career. I think it might have been at Arsenal, actually, Clarkey. I'll have a look later on. But Robbins perfected the technique before his centre-forward took it on yesterday.
Decent.
Yeah, he was a good player. So Robbins, Coventry fans love him. Norwich have got themselves a Wagner loving as well after David inspired the Canaries to tame the Lions in their own den. Norwich winning 3-2 at Millwall in front of supervillain Gianni Infantino for some reason. Can't quite get my head around that, Clarkey, but this is a significant win for Norwich. We know they're good away under Wagner, but to go and win at Millwall, who hadn't been beaten on their own patch since September, is quite the statement. And they supplant them in the playoff places as a result.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. On Gianni Infantino, at 3 o'clock, he was a Lion. By 5 o'clock, he was a Canary, wasn't he? What an evil, shape-shifting knobhead Gianni Infantino is. But there you go. Yeah, not his biggest fan. Did he get booed? I mean, if you get booed at the new den, you know about it, don't you? He normally gets booed everywhere he goes. But yeah, no, look, Norwich are doing pretty well, aren't they? Confidence really, really high. I think only Burnley and Borough have got more points than Norwich City since he took over. So the impact is pretty obvious. It was interesting what he did with the team. Marquinhos, we talked about him last week, goal and assist on the bench, wasn't he? And he only got a minute towards the end. So it shows the depth. He moved Adam Eder out to the left-hand side. Teemu Pukki came back in and they went really, really strong with a three-man midfield. And that sort of paved the way for a victory. I have to say that this win owes plenty to homework and to a willingness to try something different from Norwich's point of view. They spoke ahead of kickoff about needing to score from more set pieces. Norwich had only scored from two corners all season long. And they thought, well, we're not going to score one against Millwall if we sling it into the box for the land of the Giants to head it away. So for anyone that hasn't seen the goals, I mean, two very, very ingenious corner kick routines. The first one is the charge of the Light Brigade from the edge of the box. 3, 4, 5 players charged towards the penalty spot, take defenders with them, and it frees up Sorensen on the edge to strike the shot first time. Brilliant idea. Second one was even better because the degree of difficulty was unbelievable. I think it's Hernandez. He's about 10 yards off the byline, and there's a pass slid in to that corridor between him and the byline for him to dart in, and he crosses it, and it gets a little nick on the way in. It's very, very impressive from Norwich City. So they deserve the 3 points for those two set pieces alone, in my opinion. So well done to David Wagner. Well done to the coaching staff for picking up a couple of really, really smart routines.
As for Millwall, 2 goals from 22 shots, as Gianni Infantino might say, were he Gary Rowett for the day today. I feel like I'm going to put my players through shooting practice next week. Sam, QPR, no marginal gains worth for them. Another 3-1 defeat, 2-2 for the new Hoops boss. This after his team, like Sunderland, fell victims to an unwanted X factor, former Rangers man Jordan Hughill, starring for Rotherham. How about this? Let your valour rise, let your valour rage. We'll ward off these haunting hands while protecting our wives and children. For thee I defy the lightning bolts of hell while my enemies stand there in confusion. That's the pre-match team talk that we had before the start of the podcast. It's also the translation of the first verse of the Haka, which apparently the QPR players learned as a team bonding exercise this week. It didn't really work. I'll let you lament QPR in a bit, Sam, but pour some love on Rotherham first, because they're 8 points clear of trouble, having lost their talismanic manager earlier in the season. Matt Taylor's doing a terrific job in place of Paul Warne.
He really is, and there would have been a lot of criticism, I think, in his early days there. I think he was under huge scrutiny. He's been able to weather that storm, come out the other side. We've obviously had him on the pod previously. I think he's one of the most flexible managers, you know, thinking back to his time at Exeter. And I think he's shown real bravery in what he's done at Rotherham so far. I wouldn't say this was one for the purists at the weekend. This was maybe a bit of Rotherham of old, partly because QPR are probably in the process of adapting a new style themselves, which we kind of anticipated. But he has played a bit more football, and they did in the second half. He's changed the shape, you know, probably for 5 years since we've been, you know, covering the leagues. Rotherham have been a 3-5-2 team, really. It's a great success under Paul Warne. So to change it to the 4-3-3, you know, varying shapes, but invariably with a back four, has shown, you know, trust in his coaching ability and some really good signings as well. I think Fosu Henry yesterday was what, not in terms of goals and assists, but what Chair and Willock have been for QPR. Graceful, flair, ability to go past people. Connor Coventry, a good pickup. Bailey Wright, Hjelder, Clarkey spoke about a few weeks ago. Jordan Hughill, that was a really good performance. The goal's been coming and he gets two against his former club yesterday. So really good impact from those players. I really enjoyed the changes when QPR pegged them back to 2-1. The game was on the knife edge. QPR did all right yesterday in an attacking sense and in terms of their endeavour. The defending was woeful, and that's where the focus will be. But there was lots more to take heart from yesterday in QPR's performance. But Matt Taylor, 2-1, QPR knocking on the door somewhat, made two really attacking changes, like for like. Georgie Kelly, who scored that goal at Gillingham, if you remember, to get them promoted for Hughill. And then Connor Washington, who's a centre forward for Fosu, who's a midfielder. So I know they would have had a reshuffle, but showed his intent. Kelly causes some mayhem. And they get a third to cement the 3 points. So yeah, huge credit for him yesterday. On the flip side, yeah, QPR, bit better. And I just had a quick look at the stats. This isn't groundbreaking analysis by any stretch of the imagination. But yesterday, pass success rate, I thought Clarkey would probably be able to shed more light on this, 48% QPR. And I looked at a couple of recent away games. Middlesbrough, probably not a brilliant comparison because it's a bit more of a football match. 75%. Huddersfield, probably similar to what they faced yesterday at Rotherham, 69%. So even in a week, there's a drop off of 20% in terms of the pass success rate and more longer balls. Possession was about even, as you would expect against Rotherham, but definitely a change in style yesterday, going longer, not taking as much care with the football. And you know what? Without Chair, without Willock, you can't play that football probably. So I understand why Gareth probably flipped it so quickly.
I wouldn't knock that at all. No, you've got to play to your strengths. And if you haven't got your star sort of playmakers, the ones that make it happen with the ball at their feet, you've got to maybe think of something different. So no, I'm not going to knock him for that. What I do want to know is about your thoughts on learning the Haka. I don't want to dig Gareth Ainsworth out too much for it, because it looks bad when you lose the game. But as a player, what would you have thought if it's like, right, lads, at the end of training today, we're going to stick around, and then you end up having a Haka masterclass. Are you embracing it, or are you thinking, what is going on here?
Well, I think there would have been a few in the dressing room thinking that. I've spoken already about my concern about whether some of the methods would translate to the higher level. And I still see that as a bit of an issue over a long period. Then of course he can probably create that harmonious atmosphere that he had at Wickham. But further down the levels, people will run through brick walls because they're not on the big bucks and what have you, and they haven't got the egos. I was quite open-minded. I wouldn't have had a problem with it. I understand the predicament Gareth walked into, but in the summer, maybe when you're building towards a season, I think it probably gives ammunition to the opponent as well. Maybe only a couple of percent, but in that dressing room yesterday, the Rotherham lads between themselves might have been saying, what about this lot? The hacker. Let's show them that what we're all about today. Do you know what I mean? I just think to put it out there in the public domain, I understand the way the world works now. We're all on social media. It could get QPR a few more fans, couldn't it? And it's all about engagement and clicks and what have you. But I'm not sure right now, especially now that they've been defeated at Rotherham, if all the supporters are going to be fully on board, and they need everyone together right now.
Yeah, it's looking a little bit dicey for them, to say the least. We're going to go into League One. Keep your hyping that they don't. Ipswich look back to their early season form, don't they, Adrian? Third straight win, crushed Burton. And it's not a Burton side, you know, that we saw a few months ago. Burton have been in decent nick themselves in the last few weeks. So this is a significant win. And I think interesting, because there's 5 points between they and Plymouth now. Quinbet have got Ipswich 5-2 on to get promoted. Plymouth 4-5. So they think that Ipswich are going to be able to usurp them. Given that this game was all over by half time, would you agree with that?
Well, I'm confident that Ipswich can get plenty of points between now and the end of the season. It's just what Plymouth do, isn't it? Can they maintain this amazing home form? Can they improve a little bit away from home? I'm still backing Ipswich to steal it, because their strikers are in form. And the key issue here is that it's not just one striker. And I'm not saying it is with Plymouth either. They've got goals from different sources, but they've got three at the moment, Ipswich, that are in good nick. Connor Chaplin on fire. He's got 6 braces, I think, this season. He gets a goal every 145 minutes in the league this season. Freddy Dadapo, I think he's got 12 in the league at a rate of one every 152 minutes. So almost the same. And then you've got Nathan Broadhead, who's come in, hit the ground running. He scores at a rate of one every 170 minutes. You've got 3 guys that are better than 1 in 2. That's good. That is good at any level. And it gives you options. And we're not even talking about guys like Harness that are coming off the bench and others as well. So I think they're looking strong. They've won the last 3 of their last 4 home games by 4-0 now. They're sort of dispatching all the teams they should dispatch. Burton made this tricky, really awkward. They went man to man. They were properly in Ipswich's face, and it wasn't an easy start to the game for them, but they found a way. Once they got one, then it went bang, 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 and they went through the gears. So yeah, I find it quite hard to pick faults really in McKenna's setup. I really like the right side. My dad's namesake, Harry Clark at right back. He's got a lovely little combo going with Wes Burns, who I think is a terrific League One player. I really do. I think it was a great signing. I think they combined for the first 2. It was good to see Luongo, I think, play from the start. And I think he had a decent game in central midfield as well. So, yeah, good day at the office for the Tractor Boys.
Certainly was. You'd say the same for Shrewsbury. Maybe not Derby, though. I don't want to get into whether it's a blip or a wobble again for the Rams. We've done that. But either way, they've won just 2 of their last 6. 4 of those games were at home. This after they chucked away a 2-goal lead to draw against Shrewsbury. Sam, it could have been different had Marco Morosi not denied Lewis Dobbin in stoppage time. But what's your take on this? Are you thinking this is a point really well gained by Shrewsbury, or are you more focusing on the 2 dropped by Derby?
I think you got to give Shrewsbury enormous credit, really. Derby had been on an astonishing run at home. Well, 7 wins out of their last 8 at Derby. So, yeah, this is a great point, and seems to all be boiling down to a brilliant half-time from Steve Cottrell. He's been similar to Rotherham, really. 3-5-2 man, and went to a back 4. Taylor Moore to left back and Pennington to right back. Made a couple of changes. Like-for-like changes, really, but the game just flipped on its head. I think, obviously, the first Shrewsbury goal, which is a goalkeeping mistake, I think, from the free kick, Tom Bayliss's strike just creeping in at the near post, that turns it, and then it's a really bad mistake from Jake Rooney, a rookie fullback, which I'm sure he'll learn from, but it was an absolute stonewaller and stuck away by Leahy. I was going to apologise for this because I called him a fullback last night, and he's been playing in central midfield for 2 years. So So I say 2 years, I think longer than that. But
he plays in all sorts of positions.
I think it's a mistake I've made before, and the good people of Shropshire have been quick to let me know about it. So because of that error, I'm going to be on the motorway tomorrow going into various workplaces and calling people useless and such like. So
mainly in Oswestry. Yeah, nice.
Yeah. Sorry to Luke Leahy, who I've been told is on 10 in all comps now, not just the seven in the league. But yeah, he's a really good source of goals, and obviously he's a good penalty taker. And it's a brilliant point. And 18 points from losing positions, one better off than Bolton in that regard, who have been amazing. Think about the amount of late goals that Bolton recovered, especially at home early part of the season, shows you that this is a strong, resilient outfit. They're not going to make the playoffs for my money. That gap's quite big. Derby, on the other hand, are there. I think Paul Warne even spoke about that the other day. You know, he doesn't probably believe they're going to make those automatics now, but certainly playoffs for Derby, and they're going to be a real force.
On the subject of getting abused on social media, got myself embroiled in a little row with a Sheffield United fan last night who basically hashtagged me journalist on numerous occasions, kept coming for me because I was on the radio and I was factually correct in stating that Sheffield United hadn't beaten anyone in the top 10 away from home, and pulled me up on the back of them losing to Blackburn Rovers away from home to say that what I'd said was totally wrong and that I'm a journalist. So I screenshotted their away record and said, as you can see, they have still not beating anybody in the top 10. And the argument against was that because they're in second, I should have included 11th place, in which case it would count. But 11th isn't in the top 10, right? I'm not imagining things here. I'm in the right, surely.
You're top correct. Is top half his argument here, is it?
No, it was like, no. Because they're in the top 10, I've got to extend the top 10 to 11th, which is just nonsense, isn't it? And then he said, but you also didn't say they've not played four teams in the top 10 yet. I was like, I said they hadn't beaten anyone away from home in the top 10. So there you go. It was a good row. I think I won it. I just need a little bit of validation from you boys.
You drop me in Shrewsbury and then you can carry on up, can't you? Call people useless at various workplaces tomorrow morning.
The key is do not engage. Well, from one row, Clarkie, let's take you to another of your favourite characters, but I think you'll enjoy this a bit more because Steve Evans Stevenage lost again in League Two. Upset of the day. This one, rock bottom Rochdale, seeing off second place Stevenage. Stevenage did have a win in midweek, but they've now blanked in three of their last four. But again, we ought to talk about the winners first, haven't we? Because Rochdale haven't won at home since November, and this puts them within 4 points of safety.
Definitely. First of all, I love Stevenage. I want Stevenage to go up. If they lose, it doesn't make me happy. I love my time there. So just want a clarification there. on Rochdale, this was a really good performance. Really good. They pressed really well. They passed beautifully. We know that they want to knock the ball around. It's just that they've got a little bit of a soft centre, Rochdale. And when teams get physical, and Stevenage are a physical side, then they normally come a cropper. But here they played around them. Stevenage weren't at it in the first half. Runners were coming from midfield, and Stevenage, they caught them on a lazy day. Players weren't tracking their runners properly, and they scored a couple of early goals and held on, really. I think special mention to, well, two mentions, really. One to Devontae Rodney. I think he's their main man up front, scored a really nice goal. Crisp finish across the keeper. And also the 19-year-old in midfield, Ethan Brearley. The fans really like this kid. He's come through the academy and he's a footballer. And it hasn't been easy for him to impress as a footballer this season for the team bottom of League Two. But he's got something about him, and he had a great game here against Stevenage. So yeah, well played, Rochdale. As for Barra, well, he ripped it up after 33 minutes, made two subs, changed the system, moved away from the back three. I think they're missing Van Cooten at the moment. He's a good player. Right back's not playing. Wilding, who I think is terrific. So they've been a little bit disrupted at the back. They were in today, apparently. Extra training, day off cancelled. Again, I want to ask Sam's view on this. It must have happened to him a few times. It happened to me a lot when I cast my mind back to my career, you make plans as a footballer, you know, family stuff on a Sunday, here's your day off, or maybe even a Wednesday sometimes. You got things arranged, and then managers just, they don't care about it. They'll just get you in and run you often, or make you sit through a video. Stevenage, high-flying Stevenage in on their day off, Sam, what's your take?
Very on brand, is it not, for Steve Evans? You can't, I'd imagine.
Yeah, they're not surprised, are they?
I'd imagine there's been a few like away trips like during his managerial career where lads have got obviously their clobber for the night out. They've asked him if they can stay over in the Northwest. They've been given the green light on the Thursday, only to lose, and then you've got to trudge back on the coach, night out's off.
That's true.
Always.
That true.
Or I can still feel it in the pit of my stomach how that felt, because it's happened to me. Undoubtedly has happened to me on a few occasions. Yeah. And if you're, unless you're on like, you know, a 5, 6, 7 game losing streak crisis and it's been muted in the week, I always thought it was a bit sore, to be honest, for the reasons that you've mentioned. Just get in earlier on a Monday or do a double on the Monday.
All right. Well, the good Wednesday. News is you're doing okay, both of you, today. So I won't get you back in tomorrow to re-record the pod.
Got to come to Centre Parks and do it in the breakfast hall.
By the way, they weren't even, I mean, they didn't play well by their standards. They still outshot Rochdale by 28-9. They had 10 corners to nil. It wasn't the most abysmal of abysmal performances. I think in the context of their season, it was a shocker, but you know, they'll have played much worse, I'm sure.
The worst on those days was quite often that you'd be made to train as well, which would go completely against the grain, like in terms of now, like the red zone recovery days and all that. Because still on towards the end of my career, Monday, I was stiffer than I was on the Sunday and needed a recovery day on the Monday. So you were basically made to train, which was like physically hard, but it was more, I suppose, a mental test as well. Because it's quite easy for the ones that I played the 90 minutes just to go, no way. But you had to get out there and normally put a little bit in, didn't you?
But going back even further, coaches were allowed to run you know, just basically punishment runs.
Yeah.
And it's so counterproductive. It's unbelievable, but that was the way of the world then.
No punishment runs for either Leighton Orient or Swindon because they shared the points at Brisbane Road. Only right that Sam Parkin gets to analyse the Sam Parkin derby. But here's my 2 pence worth, Sam. I thought that was the very definition of a perfectly flighted corner from Kieran Sadlier onto the bonce of Omar Beckles, and in it went.
Yeah, but the type of goal which the Swindon staff would have gone ballistic about, the ease of it, you can't. I mean, it doesn't happen rarely, does it, that there's no challenge on the player heading the ball from what the edge of the 6-yard box or inside. Keeper doesn't get a touch. It just goes from the foot of the taker perfectly onto the centre half's head into the back of the net. It was woefully defended, but so to be expected because Swindon are decimated. This was an incredible point. 4 injuries at centre half, 2 long term. Some of it, unfortunately, definitely in the eyes of the supporters, is down to the hierarchy at Swindon. They let Angus McDonald go during the window, tried to get a young lad in from Tottenham, fell through. They've had a couple of centre-halves, I believe, in training in the last week or two. Nobody's been able to get over the line to this point. So they had Tom Clayton, who's a very, very good centre-half in his first year of league football, signed in from Liverpool. They had Joe Tomlinson, who's on loan from Peterborough, a good player, but a fullback. He's a Swindon lad, actually, so fans love him. He was part of the back three. And Harrison Minterm was on loan at Chippenham, 19-year-old local boy as well, in for his first start against the best team in the division. Another lad, Reece Devine, played on the left-hand side very well as well, by all accounts. They signed him from Manchester United in the summer, I think. He's hardly kicked a ball, been injured the entire of the season. So you had 2 players making their first league starts. So inevitably, they came under pressure, a lot of long throws, 12 corners Orient had as well, but no real standout opportunities. It wasn't backs to the wall for Swindon, who played some really good stuff. Got some good footballers. George McEachran, already 3 games in, I think it is, has surprised me because we covered him a lot in the PL2, Matt. I was never sure. And now you're looking, you know, never really rated him. And now you're looking at someone who probably coasted in the PL2. You stick him in a League 2 game where you've got to move it quickly and you've got to show your technical ability that you've learned in one of the top academies, he's standing out. like standing out amazingly well after a handful of games. Johnny Williams, Charlie Austin, Rushen Hepburn Murphy, some really talented footballers. And Richie Wellens said as much. If you give someone the opportunity to play and you don't get your pressing right, they can bypass you and look like a really good side. So no, this was a great point. Another goal away from home for Jacob Wakelin. And, you know, it's still going to be a big task to get in those playoffs, but they're still in it. And after the wobble, I think it was three straight defeats. That's a wobble. Yeah, that's a wobble. After the wobble, this has been a really good return from some tricky games. So definitely a fair reflection on what went on at Brisbane Road, I'm still allowed to call it that.
Yeah, and listener, if you're wondering, George McEachran is indeed Josh's younger brother, as you suspect.
And I normally call him Josh, so well done, me.
Progress. There you go. You're definitely not getting run tomorrow. All right, so they were the big games from the weekend, but there are some teams that we haven't talked about enough this weekend, this season, this whole podcast. Either way, next we're going to put that right. We'll be joined by an AFL expert. Well, inevitably, our focus tends to be on teams who are either doing really well or really terribly, which means we've neglected a number of sides this season. We're going to put that right with the help of EFL expert Gab Sutton. You'll know him from the EFL Debate and the BBC Squad Goals show. Gab, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time. Tell us a bit about yourself and why it's the EFL that has captured your heart.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of things, really, Matt. First of all, great to be on here. Good to see you all and be on the show. I think the first thing really was just I remember going to a random game. I think it was watching Burton Albion play Chesterfield in 2014, and Chesterfield won that day to clinch promotion from League Two. And just a few things really, partly the sort of celebrations of Chesterfield, partly being kind of close to the pitch. All these sorts of things that just kind of really kind of got me into lower league football. And then I started writing about it alongside actually at that point writing about the Premier League. But I actually felt like I was almost getting a bigger audience writing about the lower league because the stuff that I was producing was, less commonly available. Whereas in the Premier League, you're competing with so many mainstream sources. So I almost wanted to try and create more coverage of the lower leagues than you see in the mainstream media. And hopefully as a result of that, there is more coverage of lower league football in the mainstream media. And I suppose that's really my kind of core purpose. And obviously tweaked quite a bit, as you can probably tell, at Gab Sutton. And then I have a show called EFL Debate where I talk to various people in the game as well as fans as well. Few things really, but always love the EFL. I love the drama of it, promotions and relegations. Anyone can beat anyone. If you're too good for a league, you'll go out of it. And I just love that. I love that part of it. Not done too badly, I guess.
Straight off the bat then, who's been the best interviewee? Because you've had some good ones, haven't you, this year?
Oh, do you know what? My favourite one was probably Darren McAntony, because he's just so outspoken. You can just have some absolutely wild conversations, and he's a little bit off the rails, but you almost quite like that because it's quite good for numbers, to be honest with you. I've definitely really enjoyed speaking to Darren McAntony, but I've also had some really good managers on there as well.
Yeah, no, it's really, really good. And yeah, kudos to you for creating the audience and for getting these guests on. Absolutely brilliant stuff. Now, we did set you a bit of homework. We'll get to that very, very shortly. But I know that you were at a game yesterday.
I was
at Cheltenham. So yeah, quick match report. What happened there of interest?
Big win for Cheltenham. I think they deserved it as well. A little bit of pressure on them going into the game after a few disappointing performances, but certainly a big result for them and for Wade Elliott. Second half performance was excellent. Alfie May is the obvious sort of talisman, sort of cracking volley in the second half. So he's a real match winner for them. But a mention for Will Ferry. He might go over, sort of under the radar to outsiders because he's been injured a bit this season, and maybe people who don't watch Cheltenham so much, you know, might not be able to know how good he is. But I think he looks really agile, great dribbler. He'd be a close second for man of the match. And then Caleb Taylor, any West Brom fans listening, you've got a player. He had an injury in the second half and he was forced off, so hopefully he's okay. But he's definitely been one of Cheltenham's top performers as well. So big win for them and for Wade Elliott.
Yeah, put some 4 points above the relegation zone in League One. So we've assigned you a team from each division to tell us about. In the Championship, Hull City. I mean, the story here is the manager, isn't it? Sacked by a League One club earlier in the season, and all of a sudden he's got a team in the Championship flying, and they go and beat promotion-chasing West Brom on Friday night.
Yeah, I think it seemed like Asher Nirjala, the Hull City owner, wanted someone with a bit of understanding of the domestic leagues. He went down into the European market with Shota Arveladze. That didn't quite work out as they were hoping. I think Liam Rossini just comes across really well in his interviews, and I'm sure that was a big factor in him getting the job, because I suppose on paper it wasn't an obvious one, because he actually didn't land the permanent gig at Derby County because they ended up giving it to Paul Warne. But I think that he seems to have really good people skills, comes across so well in the media, and I'm sure he's great at the man management aspect. And I think he's just certainly solidified Hull. They're much better at just doing the basics, looking after the ball, organisational, that sort of things. And I think we saw that on Friday night. They looked very well drilled. If they can sign the right two or three players in the summer, then hopefully they can be playoff contenders next season.
Yeah, when I think about Liam Rossini's Hull, I think well organised, well coached, don't concede very many goals. Where are they going to score the goals from? And I know they did the other night against West Brom. It was a good performance. Do you think if he's given better tools, i.e. more front men that are capable of scoring goals, that he'll turn them potentially into promotion contenders next season?
You talk about front men. I mean, I think Benjamin Tete's got it in him to go another gear. I thought he had a really good game on Friday night, and he's big, he can win headers, but he also looks to be quite agile as well. I thought he took his goal on the turn really well. It was an awkward finish, but he got it spot on. So maybe Benjamin Tete can push on. But I always think that what you want is to not need to bring in too many players in the summer. You want to kind of have that bit of steady progress and then bring in two or three of the right sort of quality and just work it in casual. I think what Hull felt they had to do in last summer was almost overhaul the squad and bring in lots of quality, lots from the sort of continental market. And I think it was difficult to sort of then have that sort of synergy from the start. Whereas I think next season it could be a little bit different because they won't need that sort of overhaul. So that's where I'd be quite excited for the Tigers for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if the owner is kind of patient with it and doesn't want to just throw the baby out with the bathwater. Yeah, time will tell on that one, I guess. Meanwhile, Lincoln City in League One. We had a tweet from Johnny Rick last week. He said he liked the pod, but there wasn't enough Imps insight on it. So that's what we're looking for from you, Gab. They don't get many goals either, do they? But they are unbeaten in nine after winning against Oxford.
I tell you what, I'll give you a mad stat on Lincoln City, Matt. They're unbeaten at home all season in March. The only team in League One to be unbeaten at home at this stage of the season. And yet they've won more away games in the league than they've won home games. I mean, how do you work that one out? I think they're obviously a rock-solid team under Mark Kennedy. They've got some solid foundations. Carl Rushworth in goal, I think, is absolutely outstanding. I think he'll probably play for Brighton one day. Yeah, so I think lots to like about them. At the same time, it feels like Lincoln are very good at embracing the underdog tag. They've been able to pull off some smash-and-grab points where you wouldn't have necessarily expected them to. I think sometimes when the onus has been on them to win, that's where they've struggled a little bit more. So, but I like what Mark Kennedy's doing. I think he's got some good foundations in place. So, yeah, fingers crossed for them.
Yeah, you think of the players they've had in the attacking areas the last few seasons. Johnson, obviously, Morgan Rogers. I think Tom Hopper was always a good kind of focal
Scully.
Point for
he was
him.
Pretty decent, wasn't he, Scully?
Scully, yeah. Scully Jr. I used to watch his dad. Not so good. in terms of this squad, we were quite excited about Jack Diamond at the start of the season. That's curtailed, hasn't it? Who's their best attacking outlets right now?
So for me, it's Ben House. I think he's Jake Tong, actually, from the Stacey West, reckons he's the most technically accomplished forward in the league in terms of link-up play. And I wouldn't sort of go against that. I think the thing you've got with Jack Diamond, I think you're right to mention him, but I think they're so reliant on him that sometimes you can get a bit burnt out. And maybe they've not really had the depth that they would have wanted. But, I mean, if you've got a better chance of keeping him on next season, then, you know, could that end up being working in their favour a little bit? But I've been really impressed with Ben House for sure. And must mention Ethan Ahahon, they got from north of the border in the summer. He's a midfielder, really composed operator as well. So Ahahon, Diamond and House, I think, are their top players.
Just looking at that home record, it is incredible, isn't it? Played 17, won 4, drawn 13, lost 0, scored 16 goals, conceded 11. I can't work out if you're getting value for money for your season ticket at Sinsel Bank or not. At least you're not seeing any defeats, I guess. Another team who draw loads are Crewe Alexandra in League 2. 4 in a row now for them, 15 across the season. Difficult one to assess in a way, isn't it, Gab? Because you kind of think, well, obviously they're not bouncing back to League 1 at the first attempt, but it looks at one stage as though they might suffer back-to-back relegations, and at least that's not going to happen now.
Yeah, I think after last season and the manner they were relegated from, I think there's probably some merit in saying we just need to stabilize a little bit and bring in some solidity. And I think when you look at the performances of Luke Offord in central defence alongside Rob McDonald, who's probably been one of their best signings, I think they've solidified. But I think going forward, at times they've been a little bit turgid, and I think that's probably where they're going to have to improve, because I think the problem we've got with Crewe Alexandra is they're so youth academy orientated that it takes a little bit away from their recruitment. So they're not always thinking, hey, can we recruit players? They're actually thinking, well, let's wait for the next crop. But if they've not got a crop coming through immediately, then that can cause problems. So really interesting to see how they sort of tailor their recruitment in the summer, because that's going to be crucial for them, I think.
Obviously, they've had the managerial change, or a couple of in recent times. What about the football? Has that changed? Because when I think of Crewe, I've not seen them in the flesh for quite a while. I always think of a good football inside, you know, a team that get the ball on the deck and play fast passing football. Is that how it is at the moment or not?
I don't think that's what they've seen this season, actually, Adrian. I think they've kind of had to prioritise defence, and that was certainly the case under Alex Morris. I think they've sort of tweaked it a little bit under Lee Bell. I think he's been tried to be slightly more adventurous at times, but no, I think it's mainly been about sort of digging in for points and being quite compact this season. So they've kind of gone away from their principles a bit, and I think that can be quite dangerous, I guess, when, as you say, Adrian, that's been so sort of rooted in their DNA. I think if you go against that, you take a bit of a risk. So whether Lee Bell can get them playing better football next season, we'll have to wait and see. But a couple of players coming through the academy that are quite talented, so we'll see.
Yeah, but I think they've got quite an interesting strike pairing. I got to finish on strikers. So Dan Adji, obviously I saw quite a bit of him at Oxford. In flashes, looked like a good player. And Nevitt, I saw play at Wembley for Warrington Rylands before he got his break in the EFL. And I've quite liked him as well. So possibly, you know, a good goal scoring pairing there moving forward. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I think what's interesting is I've always thought of Adji as this kind of live wire who likes to run at people and do that side of things. And then this season for Crewe, it seems to have been more him as the focal point, and then there'd be someone else running off him. So you mentioned Elliot Nevitt there. I think he's sort of tried to do that. But actually, I think Adji might almost be better at times sort of playing off a striker. But I think possibly at times they think because he's got those physical qualities, he can be a focal point. So I still think they've got some work to do, really, to find a formula that's going to create chances. I think that's been a real problem for them this season.
Yeah, but at least they're not going down, I guess, from their perspective, the railway men. Gab, thank you so much for your time today. Tell us again how everybody can keep up to date with you and everything that you do.
Yeah, cheers. You can follow me on Twitter at GabSutton. I tweet sort of talking points that you can chip in on your EFL team as well. So you can follow me on Twitter at GabSutton. And I also have a show called EFL Debate, as I mentioned earlier, where I talk to various people within the game and fans. So you can follow me on Twitter at GabSutton and follow the hashtag EFL Debate.
Who's on your hit list before we let you go? Who's next on the EFL Debate? Who are you targeting?
Well, I tell you what, I was hoping to get an interview with Gareth Ainsworth. Gareth Ainsworth has been Wycombe Wanderers manager for 11 years, Adrian. The one time I managed to get it agreed where I was going to interview Gareth Ainsworth, he went to QPR. So that's just how it works sometimes. So I wasn't able to get that one. I have to hit up the QPR media team and see if I can get that one rearranged.
Mate, wait till they win, mate, would be my advice there.
Yeah, I was just going to say the same. He's a nice fella, Gareth, but you might want to let him get a win under his belt. He'll be happy to talk to you, I'm sure. Listen, we're happy to talk to you anytime. We really appreciate you coming on today, and we'll speak to you again soon. Cheers, Gab.
Yeah, absolutely. All the best with the pod. Take care, folks.
Many thanks to Gab Sutton for his company and his insight tonight. Excellent stuff. Before we go, got a tweet of the week, of course. Now, this is particularly pertinent given Clarkie's rant about what happened to him on social media this weekend, right? It comes from Elliot Bennett of the aforementioned Shrewsbury, who said, amazing away following today and a fantastic comeback to gain a point in the second half. At Luke Leahy with cojones of steel. Incredible shift from the boys at Shrewsbury Town. Blue heart emoji, yellow heart emoji, all fairly standard stuff. I included it because I like the use of the word cojones. But as I look at this, the first reply comes from Tom at TommyM2323. He's a Derby fan and he simply replies, you're awful. To which Elliot says, thank you. Must be delighted with the 6 points you've taken from such an awful team then. ... Saluting emoji. I think, Clarkie, Elliot Bennett may just have won football Twitter there.
It was the perfect response, a riposte, wasn't it, from him? Yeah, well played. He didn't just accept it. He's come back with a jibe of his own that wins the day, doesn't he? So yeah, well played. Well played, Elliot Bennett. Good on him. I also applaud the use of cojones. It's underused, I think, these days.
Pretty good stuff, Sam. Obviously, Tom had to bite back by saying, keep chomping my guy. No likes, no retweets. Tom's been put back in his box.
On that, by the way, can you have cojones of steel? For me, I think it has to be, he got massive cojones.
Balls of steel is the accepted
exactly, but it's not a direct translation. Has he got this wrong? That's the big question, Sam.
You steal it, my thunder. I've never heard it before, but I like it. I'm not getting involved in anything Shrewsbury today after the 24 hours I've endured. I like that line. I don't particularly like the rest of it. Bog standard stuff, but that's a really good line to his teammate. And he's used the emoji that me and Clarkie don't know in his reply to Tom. What is it? It's a head.
It's a saluting face. If you go on Twitter on a computer and hang over the emoji, I'm not sure about that. But if you're on Twitter on your laptop and you hold your cursor over the emoji, it will tell you what the emoji is. So if you're ever in doubt, that's the workaround for it.
Terrific intel. I can't for the life of me think what that is. But Matt, you use it. So you and Elliot, two peas in a pod.
It means like, okay, chief, I've got you. That's fine. Salute.
If anyone wants to tweet in, you know, at EFL Watler with, you know, because I think this is important. Should it be massive cojones and balls of steel? Should they be separate?
Why don't we get an EFL legend, Troy Deeney, on the pod?
I was just
thinking
about
he can tell us
Troy
the translation,
Deeney.
Can't he?
That's not a bad shout.
Official translation. And you're Arsenal as well, mate. So it would make...
Hey, I saw him at Arsenal the other week. I think he's kids gooners. I mean, he's given Arsenal plenty, hasn't he, down the years. But yeah, I saw him as I left the ground. But I was, too scared to say.
Leave it with me. All right. I sat on a bench watching him enough. He owes me one.
We'll wait and see if we can reprise the Walsall glory years on an upcoming show. That's just about going to do us for this week. Another reminder before we go of the offer from our friends at Quinbet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer where you can get a free bet worth up to £35. It's for new customers to sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or just use the link provided in the description of this pod. It's 18 plus and remember, always gamble responsibly. Clarkie, we've talked about Twitter almost as much as we have football today. So tell everybody about the other social media platforms they can find.
Yeah, we're doing bits on Instagram and TikTok at What the EFL. It's pretty easy to remember. If you want to see clips, best bits, whatever you want to call them, that's where to find us.
Lovely stuff. If your podcast platform of choice has a ratings and review system, if you could drop us one, that'd be tremendous. Helps other people find us. We appreciate the people who've taken the time to do that or just told a mate about us. That's another way that people can get on board and join the What the EFL train. We won't just settle Twitter beefs. We will give you proper football insight, which I think we've done pretty well today. Do join us again next week if you can. Many thanks again to Gab Sutton for joining us earlier and to Adrian and Sam, of course, for all their wise wisdom. We'll catch up with you again soon. Bye for now.